Alrighty, good morning, everybody. It is a freezing balls of a brass monkey Friday in Johannesburg, South Africa. One of our guests is in Hong Kong. The other one is in who knows where. He calls it, what, Joburgton. We'll find out exactly where that is and what that means in just a short while. We've got some lovely people on this morning, and we've got plenty to talk about. And as usual, we're going to try to keep you warm and get your day started in just the right way. So welcome to the show. And let's get into it without any further ado. I spent the entire week energized by Argentina's match on Monday. I'm not the biggest sports fan in the world. Normally when people talk about sport, I just glaze over and stop listening. But man, this World Cup is delivering. So in case you didn't see it, and maybe you don't care about Argentina, I'm going to bore you for the next couple of minutes anyway. They were playing against Egypt, and Egypt had scored two amazing goals, and there was only 15 minutes left of the game. And some people would have said, oh no, this is the end of Argentina, the reigning world champion, the defending world champions at the World Cup. And there have been a lot of upsets along the way. Some of the biggest teams have gone out. Norway, who we talked about the other day, took out Brazil at the knees. Brazil, the country with the most World Cups. And you can't tell me this isn't exciting. So if you haven't heard of Haaland, as they pronounce it in Norwegian, this guy is like, he's the weirdest. He looks like Shrek. And if you're an English Premier League fan, you'll probably know him from that. But man, this guy is just, he's all anyone's talking about right now. Anyway, back to Argentina. With 15 minutes to go, they pulled a miracle. I mean, obviously Messi was a big part of that, but there were other players who were involved just as much. And before the end of full time, they had managed to creep back with no less than three goals, making sure that they were through into the semi-finals. Quarter semi. I can't remember where we are in the competition, but it's just, this is way, way more exciting than I'd bargained for. So I started the week on a high, and it pretty much kept going that way. Lots of things to get into news wise. There's lots to talk about, but I want to bring on my very good friend who lives in Hong Kong now. He flies planes for a living, but you may remember him from his time on radio where he was on 947, had his own show. Used to be on Anele's show, was on Tando's show, and you will recognize the voice, you will recognize the face. Here he is. The man is Alex Cage. Hello, Cage. How are you? You bring him on. Hang on.
Yeah.
James Cartier. Oh, there we go. Oh, there he is. How's it, dude?
Yeah. Dude, I'm like adding commentary, yeah, with the football, with the World Cup, with the soccer World Cup.
Did you watch any of it?
Dude, I've actually been watching it quite a bit because it works quite nicely with our time zone. Yeah. Like some of the games are like quite early in the morning, but then the second games that have been running work quite nicely, like for when I wake up in the morning. That Argentinian game, dude, you know, there's so much controversy around it because I've actually like done like quite a bit of like depth in it, like seeing what's going on. Have you heard of the Ronaldo effect?
No, what's that?
So so Spain beats Portugal, like the most recent example, Spain beat Portugal, they knocked them out, right? Mm-hmm. The tickets for the game that Portugal would have played or would be playing next, the quarterfinal that Spain's playing, I think it's Belgium or whoever, that the ticket prices there were like 2,000, I think like starting at like $2,700. When Portugal got knocked out, the prices dropped by like 50%, so like $1,000. And everybody's saying that that foul that was, you know, called, that's that goal that was disallowed of the Egypt game, the Egypt-Argentina game. They said, no, that was all corruption because people still want to pay high premium prices tickets. Or not, people don't want to pay. FIFA want to do it. So there's so much controversy around it.
I heard that FIFA themselves made a statement this week about how they're going to investigate that referee because they think he was out of line. Honestly, watching it, I'm very biased, so I'm going to do what every sports fan always does and go, no, the ref was completely right when my side are safe.
Yeah,
I'm going to go, no, the ref's an asshole if my side are not. So, I don't give a shit as long as Argentina are through. I've supported them for 26 years.
Yeah. But dude, so you're talking about gonna change. Parliament and that row. Did you see how they did it in the Parliament?
Those Norwegians. So Alex is just bringing up the fact that in the Norwegian Parliament, the Speaker of Parliament got everyone in Parliament to do their row, which is just so fucking cool. I just love it. I love it so much. Anyway, how are you? What's news?
Yeah, the vibe. Yeah, good, dude. So I actually went and checked. The last time that I was on the show was 2023, nearly 3 years ago, which is pretty wild. That was literally just
a long time to run out of guests.
I know. I was like, when are you going to call me back on? No. That was just after I finished with radio. And then, as you know, but, you know, for those that don't, I went and flew for the likes of like the UN and WFP World Food Program in all the armpits of Africa, all the worst places that you don't want to get a tourist visa for. And that was cool, man. I can tell you stories left, right, and center.
I'm going to throw this in because it's a story that is worth telling. And, you know, we all look for stories. I'm going to let you complete the story, but I'm going to start the ball rolling because people think, they think that, you know, radio is dangerous. You can have opinions and you'll get into trouble over those opinions and, ooh, it's so controversial. And wow, you're so brave to say the things you say. And some of these obviously people mean them as compliments, but when they say them to me, I don't take them as seriously. You were in either Sudan or South Sudan, and a bunch of like rough gangsters almost shot you in the head dead.
Yeah. So I think my mom's probably going to be watching this later. So
that's okay. She knows the story never told her?
I don't know if I told her. So we were in South Sudan, Juba, which is, it's actually just gone totally worse now, but it was even back, you know, in 2024, it was quite bad already.
Juba was never Miami. Let's not kid ourselves.
Nah, look, it's on the White Nile there. It's a great view for lunch on the odd occasion. There's one particular restaurant where you can see like a couple of shipwrecks and it's really pretty from that angle. Besides that, it's an absolute shit show. So I arrived in Juba and one of my good friends now, he's also a pilot for SAA 2.0. He was the guy that welcomed me into Juba. And he's like, listen, let's go for lunch. And you can meet a couple of the expats there. So the expats being the pretty girls that work for, like the nurses and the doctors that work for these NGOs. He's like, we'll meet somebody there and they'll probably invite us to a barbecue. Let's go. We go having lunch, you know, all and behold, we meet these girls and they invite us to one of their compounds. Now, this is how everything's structured there. Each NGO or organization is an individual compound with security guards, barricades, everything like that you got to get into. So you have to be invited to go to one of these things. So we're like, well, listen, our curfew is 7 o'clock in the evening. So we can come for a couple of hours, but we got to leave before that because our curfew was from 7 o'clock at night till 7 o'clock in the next morning. If you're caught out there, the military becomes gangsters there. So you don't want to get caught out in the street. Anyway, organize everything. We get into a tuk-tuk and we are using Google Maps, which does actually work there. And we're going along on the way to this compound. Tuk-tuk driver's going and we get to this barricaded area. And we see 7 military guards. Now, obviously, these guys are fully kitted out. They are AK-47s, super tall. They're looking quite rough. But the tuk-tuk driver's like, listen, pilot problem. Yeah, well, this was certainly one of those. The tuk-tuk driver's like, listen, not going to go any further. Can't go any in broken English, not going to go any further. And we're trying to convince him to go. He's just like, not going to happen. So myself and the captain that I was with at the time, we just said, well, listen, let's walk. You've got all these green and red zones that you can go through and we'll walk towards the barricade area. If they let us in, it shouldn't be a problem. We start walking. They let us through. We're like, sweet. Well, there's the compound. Let's go for it. Anyway, we turn into this one street and it was one of these cowboy movie situations, you know, and like tumbleweed and everything going across. And we're like, okay, well, this is not looking particularly good. Right. One of the guys actually just turned around and said to us, look, you got to go back the way you came. This is not a safe area for you, especially as white guys. It's not a place that you want to be seen. We're like, okay, let's hightail, let's get out of here. We started coming back to that same barricade that these guys led us through because we thought that was a safe area. Guys stand up, all 7 of them, point the guns at us and just say, you American tourists, you think you can go where you want. Sit down, you're going to learn. And yeah, at that point, I mean, you know me pretty well. I was just like, no, not going to happen. Sorry. We've obviously gone down the wrong road. Didn't mean to, you know, upset anybody. And we're not going to sit down. And one of the things that they teach you when you're going to flying in these areas is you kind of don't want to just show weakness immediately or at all, really, because then they're just like climbing to you. They take full advantage. But now, obviously, things are getting a bit heated. And the guy back and forth, just says, sit down, you're going to learn, sit down, you're going to learn. And next moment, I heard a cracking sound. I heard another cracking sound. And then I saw this mate of mine getting whipped. And then I realized I'd been whipped as well by a guy from behind. Whipped me. And then this mate of mine just pulled me down and just said, look.
But are you talking about, about a whip, like an Indiana Jones whip?
Like, you know, like we had shamboks in South Africa.
Yeah.
Like those black rubber shamboks, pretty much like that. Okay. But it had like a bit more of a thicker leather strap on it. So he got hold of me and this mate of mine just pulled me down. And now obviously the guns are like drawn onto us. And these guys are getting like quite heightened, speaking in local and local Vodak. And we were just like, okay, this is not a really good situation. And one of these locals came, an older guy. They respect their elders quite a lot. There was something actually that I realized in Sudan or that whole region. One of these local guys just came running and just said, which NGO I was working for at the time, just called it out. And he's like, where's your crew card? And just showed him the crew card. And he's like, get the fuck out of here. Like that was it. And myself and this guy were just like, okay, let's just get up. Kind of like, walking like all like briskly, but yeah, it's not fun.
You've told me the story before, but at that moment, because very few of us actually get to consciously deal with a life threatening situation. I mean, I've been in car accidents and things, and you smell everything, you taste everything, you see everything in vivid 3D for the rest of your life when you know that it's that close to kind of death or massive ramifications. But when you're in this, I can only imagine the adrenaline is surging and you don't know what's going to happen, right? I mean, these guys could be on drugs. They could be really violent. This is a violent part of the world and not in some play way. This is easily one of the most deadly places to find yourself. It's not as if any amount of talking can get you out of this. If that older guy hadn't come along, you'd probably either be dead or you would have been beaten to within an inch of your life.
Yeah. Look, so that you're not thinking about, as much as you can tell people, you should, but you're not thinking about the consequences at that point. At that kind of point, you're trying to de-escalate the situation. Because it went initially, and I mean, this is a confession, because you process it afterwards. I shouldn't have probably been as aggressive towards him in the beginning, because I thought, look, I haven't done anything wrong. This has been my mentality for years, but if I haven't done anything wrong, I'm a bit more, I wouldn't say abrasive, but a bit more comfortable to stand on my feet and say, no, this is not right. Mm. In that kind of situation, you actually just need to try to de-escalate the situation completely. And look, I mean, I've been hijacked in South Africa as well a couple of years ago. Also there, I think I was lucky enough just to try to de-escalate once I realized, look, this is going to get messy. So once we sat down, we just kind of go, okay, let's just take a step back, reset the situation and try to be calm. Because these guys now, if you both get aggressive and they've got seven AK-47s on you, like it's not exactly a fun place to be. You don't process it that quick enough in that kind of time. The adrenaline's pumping at the moment. You've got tunnel vision. You're just focusing on the one guy speaking to you. That's why you didn't even see this guy coming from the side. So afterwards, yeah, like it takes you a couple of days to think, okay, that was pretty hairy. But yeah, look, when you fly in Africa like that, I think it is cut out for certain breeds of people. You learn to move on very quickly, because a lot of the places that we flew into in Sudan, Central African Republic especially, you land and there's armed guards all around the plane and all around the airport. And in some cases, you're leaving the engine running because if you do need a hightail out of there. So it is a stressful environment and you kind of get used to it. So I wouldn't say it's something that you can do forever. And there are these guys that do it, but it's not something you want to start a family with and do forever.
Well, somebody here says, Nico says, you probably went for one bloody strong drink or six after that.
Well, I must be honest, I've never drank as much in my life as when I was on that kind of tour. So yeah.
You've lost your drinking skills though. I saw you briefly at a dinner that we had when you were out here last time, and you've definitely become less tequila fit than I had hoped you would stay. Hong Kong has been good for you in so many ways, but this is one thing I'm going to judge you on solidly.
I'm so glad you say this, because this is kind of like balances this, like the partial heart attack that my mom's going through right now, because she's like, he nearly died, but he's actually a lot healthier. Yeah.
So she can be proud that you're not a massive alcoholic.
Yeah, but dude, you know what? So you're right. Like, I really have given up a hell of a lot of the partying. I mean, you know, I've been trying to convince you to do High Rocks. I'm still going to convince you. Don't worry about it. But from the drinking and the partying and stuff like that, especially with the role that I've taken on now with, flying these aircraft and having to be responsible for 300 to 400 people at any given time across the Pacific Ocean, I just made the conscious decision that I can't afford to wake up any day of the week with a hangover, and then I've got 400 people's lives, you know, in my hand. And if something has to even remotely go wrong, you have to be awake for it.
No, you don't have to convince me. And frankly, I think it's better for the world that you don't drink as much as you used to, because it's a lot less dangerous a place. Okay, so you've been flying now for Cathay Pacific for a while. You get to travel all over the world. You've seen so many places. First of all, there are probably people who are listening to us right now and watching who have been to Hong Kong before, but what are the coolest things about Hong Kong? Give us a like elevator pitch on why people have to go and visit Hong Kong, and then tell me about your favorite place outside of that, because you really get the part of your job to see everywhere that you could possibly wish to see.
So Hong Kong is, without a doubt, one of the safest, cleanest places that you'll see in the world. It is, everything works. The public transport system is amazing. I mean, I was telling your producers just before we went live how this whole region, when I say everything works, it's just unbelievably efficient. We were talking about, I was listening to your daily briefing, I think yesterday or the day before, and you're talking about how the world, you know, is going towards places where everybody just wants things to work. And, you know, that's kind of what you want, right? And Hong Kong is one of those places. The food is phenomenal, dude. It's so clean, it's so healthy. And by the way, so I was dating a girl from Hong Kong. She kind of helped me have a bit of a soft landing, yeah. And she was kind of letting me in, and I'm willing to share this because we need it as well.
By the way, I mean, you guys were together for like a year almost.
Yeah, about like 9-10 months. So she really was literally as I got to Hong Kong.
I don't like to compliment my friends too much, but I think that was impressive. Not because it's difficult to date an attractive woman, but because the cultural differences and the fact that you were in a completely foreign place makes it a little bit more difficult than, you know, you have all the excuses in the world to like kind of. You're flying all over, you can focus on that. But I think it's a ballsy move to date a local, start to understand the personalities, the culture, the differences. I was very impressed when you told me that. I mean, I gave her a horrible nickname, but you know, that's part of what being a friend. Yeah, that's part of what being a friend is all about, I suppose.
No, absolutely. But yeah, she helped me get that soft landing, yeah. And the food was the biggest, I wouldn't say like cultural shock, but it was something to get used to, because in South Africa, we're used to having these huge portions for ourselves in front of our face, where we have like the steak and chips and everything like that. A very cool thing about Hong Kong and this whole Asian Western region, I suppose you can find it in some places in Europe as well, is that kind of tapas vibe, but the shared dishes in Asia is amazing, because you'll have somebody that'll understand what this restaurant has to offer. They'll order about 6 to 10 dishes, and everybody just gets to nibble on all these different flavors. So the food's been incredible in Hong Kong. And I must just reiterate, the safety thing for me has been a big eye-opener, especially coming from South Africa, dude. You get to leave your phone on a table, go order food like 30 meters away, and your phone is basically the placeholder for that's where somebody is sitting. And you come back, and
it's like the opposite.
And it's still
the
there.
Opposite of here. I don't even leave my phone on the bench at the gym to prove that that's mine and that's where I'm busy, because someone will pick it up and take it away.
No, it's
but
gone.
Yeah, you posted a video of a self-driving car parking. Now I know many people in South Africa have tried these cars. It's not a new thing, but it was cool to watch it because you get out of the car. And then this thing alley ducks into the parking, and you're not even in there. You've got nothing to do with it. It just does it all itself. It's very cool.
Do you know how many people that's when it initially started really working, how that like pissed off certain people when they were trying like hold parkings and stuff like that? And the guy would be like, okay, cool, you've got the parking. Set the auto park and walk away, and that car would automatically park. But it really is. So obviously now being in Hong Kong, so Hong Kong and China, obviously, Beijing does have certain control over Hong Kong, but for the most part, they're separate regions, right? Hong Kong, special administrative region. But I get access to go into... so I'm going to tell you about the surveillance thing. So going into China, I've obviously got access to that. That's where you start seeing where technology is really, really pumping. Shenzhen, Guangzhou, where a lot of the made in China stuff comes from, Shanghai, all these places. You have all these self-driving cars, and yet the surveillance, right? Quite interesting about that. I asked one of the guys that lives in China, his wife, super interesting lady. She's one of the biggest exporters of Apple watch straps in the world. Anyway, so I was speaking to this dude and I'm like, listen, I come through the border and I'm just seeing constant cameras. And when you're driving on the roads in China, you'll constantly see like flashes, like almost like lightning. It's not, it's the cameras taking photos of the car's number plates. Wow. I asked him, you know, what's going on with all of these things? Like, is it constantly storing all this data and stuff? And he said, listen, no, what happens is their technology is so advanced that if you have a stolen vehicle or your face is recognized from stealing something, stuff like that, it goes into a central database and their technology only looks for that face or for that number plate. So he told me an example of one of the malls. I don't know what these guys are thinking. He said they're probably foreigners. They broke into this mall. They broke into a jewelry store and the people there were like, take more. Take as much as you want, because they know that as soon as they walk out of the facial recognition software that's running through China, the guys were caught like within a couple of hours, I think like 10 hours or something. And the more that you steal there, the longer your sentence, which was just quite interesting.
Sure. But the downside of that, just by the way, the downside of that is that we know that there's a social credit system in mainland China, and that if you step over too many lines, and in South Africa, we're the best in the world at stepping over lines. It's one of the reasons I do love the place, as opposed to, you know, the rules-based society like Australia or China, is that you don't have to let minor infractions, I'm not talking about people who commit serious crimes, but those minor infractions don't count against you living a normal life. So there are downsides and there are upsides to all of this, but certainly China is leading the way in that respect. Let's just go back to something I asked you a second ago, and then I want to move on to other things. All the places you've been, your favorite place to go. You've been to LA a couple of times. I have no time for LA, but you've had a good time there. New York, London. Where is your favorite place to go?
LA, very cool. I've had a couple of good experiences. I'm actually going there now in a month time to go watch Rufus Du Sol and Ben Boma. As part of one of the trips that I get to do, which is quite cool. So LA's been cool. Lake Como, man. So I flew to Milan. Our layovers in Milan are quite short. It's only like 30 hours or something like that. So you land immediately and you got to catch a train further up, to Como region. And I did this the one day and nobody wanted to join me because, you know, after a 12-hour flight, most guys are like knackered. I caught the train up, went and caught a boat onto Lake Como and took a boat up to the tip of... So Lake Como kind of looks like an old peace sign, like with like a tip like that. And on the tip was an area called Bellagio, like the Bellagio Hotel in Las Vegas.
Yes, and that's where the name comes
from. They've got a whole bunch of restaurants and foods, you know, and like little stalls and everything like that. It was just, I had this most amazing dish of pasta, this red wine, this vino, and it was just one of those special days where you can't describe it unless you're actually there, which that's definitely up there. But every region, dude. I've traveled quite a lot to Australia. When I upgrade probably later this year, I'll be flying quite a lot in Asia, so I'll be seeing a lot of those places. Bali, Indonesia, that whole region is really quite special. I mean, it's like a flight to Durban for me, so it's also quite cool down there. And I know what you're going to probably ask me. Bangkok is also quite special.
All right, now I've never been. For me, this is all amazing because I've never been east of Dubai. Really, I mean, I'm missing out on. Yeah. On half the world, everywhere I've traveled to, and I've been on all of the continents except Antarctica and Australia. But
okay,
I'm missing half the world here. So a lot of these places I know nothing about. I don't know Bali. I don't know Indonesia. I don't know China. I don't know Japan. I mean, all of these places are massively mysterious and exciting.
So this is the thing is, and this is what I realized coming here, that because we're so exposed to Western media, we only know about, you know, like you say, Europe, Americas, and you think that's the center of the world. Every country thinks, or every region, let me put it that way, thinks that they're the center of the world. And when I come here, so many things that we thought were important is like a non-event to most of Asia. You realize when there's a billion plus people, 300 million in America, a couple of 100 million in Europe, and 70 million in South Africa, it's a fraction of what these people are exposed to. So their celebrities, their cultural norms, their music, everything is so different, but it's so exciting. And I would, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm, you know, trying to sell tourism yet, but I would say to anybody, you have to come and experience what Asia has to offer, because you'll be surprised where we'll actually, as disciplined South Africans, relate to it more than anywhere in the Western world, because there's all this woke nonsense that's going on in the Americas. As with discipline, you actually fit into this environment. So I did certainly way more than anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, but you...
To give you the last little bit
of credit, and then I'm going to stop. You're a pretty disciplined human being. I mean, you decided to give up an entire career, which was going very well, to do a totally different career. And you didn't just... I mean, for context, for those people who don't know you so well, you learned to fly planes, you learned to fly helicopters. You became an aerobat in planes. You also trained other pilots. I mean, these are not things that most people can get done in the amount of time that you did. And you spent every waking hour. I mean, you bored me to death one night. Luckily, I'd been drinking. But you bored me to death one night showing me like the airflow over a wing and how it all works and what the vectors are. And I mean, I was pretending to pay attention, but I was so bored. By the way, our friend Basil says, you are like a retarded special needs elf on the shelf, and they should have shot you at that barricade.
Yeah. No, I love him too. That's one of our best mates. You know, that's the friendships. That's the friends that I have. Yeah, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. These are the people that you actually want to see when you come back here. It's very odd.
These are the people that I spend time with when I come back to South Africa. I need new friends, really. But I appreciate it, dude. Sure. You know what? But I must be honest, and just to throw credit where credit's due as well, spending time with the likes of like you and friends like Basil, you guys are all successful in your own right. And you start leveling up when you start spending time with people that are successful. You just come to realize, okay, cool. Well, I can't be the one that gets left behind. So a lot of that stuff was, I mean, you and I have been friends for, it'll be what, 20 years next year? Or around about there? I mean, I know.
Time to trade you in.
Dude, for a newer model, absolutely. So when you start spending time with people like you, you kind of, you're forced to level up. So it's massive credit to you as well for just being a good mate.
Okay, so how much like day-to-day stuff that you have to do is totally unrelated to your work? I mean, you obviously, you get some time off, you get to travel a bit. So when you're in these cities, you get, but what do you do in Hong Kong if you're not flying? And let's say you have a whole week where you might not be flying. Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah, so obviously the fitness journey has been quite a big thing for me and getting back into health, especially because with this career, it really is one of the most taxing and one of the most demanding careers out there. People think it's all lackadaisy and you're sitting in a cockpit for 12, 13 hours, but the jet lag, the sleep deprivation, the diet, constantly eating food from around the world, it really is quite taxing on the body. So I've been focusing on fitness quite a lot. The HYROX journey, I mean, we can get into it. It's been quite a special journey for me, and it's changed my life quite a bit. Or just the fitness side of things as well. And then, interestingly enough, I was talking to a mate about this yesterday. Now that I've got a bit more time on my hands, and I've always enjoyed the DJing side of things and producing side of things. So I'm actually getting back into producing some music just to keep the brain busy. I'm learning piano and guitar. I'm learning piano and guitar at the moment. So, I know. So it's been quite cool too, when I do have these off times now, to get back into some hobbies that I have actually always enjoyed, but I was kind of forced to do those late night gigs till 3 o'clock in the morning. Now to actually on my own accord go and produce some music, and release it on Spotify and SoundCloud. It's been quite cool. And then trading, if you speak to any international long haul pilots, they'll probably tell you I got into some trading at some point. That's kind of the phase that I'm going through at the moment, just to where to place the money and stuff like that. And you know, with what's going on with the oil prices and stuff like that, it's a pretty good time to get into trading. What's the nickname of the ex you gave Gareth?
Your ex in
Hong Kong. Well, listen, China's always watching these things, so I'd probably not say it, because either I'm going to get like kicked out of the country or you would never be allowed here. But it wasn't anything bad.
No, I said it to her face and she thought it was quite funny. Yeah. when you brought her for a visit.
Oh, it was a Ling Ling.
No, I called her Titlahan.
Yeah.
All right.
She took it as a good joke, which was good.
Barely Vocal Radio says, Alex, I'll make you a custom aviation headset, much better than those big headphone comms.
Dude, so interestingly, so when you inside the cockpits, we have relatively smaller ones, not like the big ones that I'm used to using with noise cancellation and everything like that. But inside the cockpit, after 15,000 feet, we go. It's called speakers and headsets. It's the common phrase that we use amongst the pilots. And you take those headsets off and you turn the speaker up in the cockpit because it's quiet enough to be able to hear the radio, from other ATC air traffic controllers or other aircraft. What's interesting though is when you're flying over the Pacific Ocean, you don't realize how big the Pacific Ocean is. I mean, you can look at it on a map and you think it's big. I mean, it's the biggest ocean, obviously. But when you're flying over there from Hong Kong to Los Angeles and you're flying over it for 10, 11, 12 hours straight at 800 kilometers an hour, it's just a whole different ballgame. We still use HF frequency, which is a frequency band that they've been using since like World War II, you know, back in the day, to communicate over those large regions, because that's the only frequency band that can actually get that far into the ocean. So at that point, we sometimes have to put the headphones on to actually hear what the guys are saying. Besides that, we don't use headphones really, except for crucial phases of flight, critical phases of flight.
Well, there's some of those satellite pictures and pictures from further out than most satellites even go that they take of the Earth, and if you take it from a certain position, it just all looks blue. There's no land visible. So, I mean, the Pacific is just phenomenal and monstrous.
There's a point in the middle of the Pacific, just on the, like a fun fact, there's a point in the middle of the Pacific called Point Nemo, which when you're at that point, the closest people to you are those that are flying overhead of the International Space Station. Just for reference on how far the nearest piece of land is to when you're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Like the nearest people to your survival are flying overhead in space. It's massive.
Wow. Okay, so how hard is it? I've never asked you this before. How hard is it to move away from your friends, your family, the people that you really know and love, and go to a place that is that far away and take on a career that you know? I mean, this is a commitment. It's not something that you can go, oh well, I'm going to do this for 5 years and then I'll see. No. When you decide to do this, it's like a career until you're 50, 60 years old. This is what you're going to do. So you are making a commitment for 20 plus years at least. And that is, again, not to blow smoke up your ass, but I think that's probably a tougher thing to do than most people realize. And you must get lonely and in the beginning a bit bored, because it's all work. And it's not like South Africa culture-wise. It's not as if you can just go and meet new people somewhere. And, you know, you probably have met lots of people in Hong Kong and while you've been traveling, but it's different, right? I mean, it's a totally strange, foreign thing to do.
So I've spoken to a couple of people about this, and I think I'm quite lucky.
Including your psychologist and your counselor and your social worker.
And like the six other personalities you know that you've met.
Yeah. That's just, you have all six of those personalities. Let's just be clear.
Yeah. So I'm lucky in twofold, I think. I think the fact that I got to go from South Africa flying up in Africa, in these remote regions where you're isolated in this prefab building with two, three other guys. You can't go out. You inside these really isolated areas. I think that was a good introduction to being away from home. And so that when I did actually do the move in 2024 up to Hong Kong, it wasn't like a massive shock to the system that I'm going to be away from home, because I was away from home for like 3-4 months at a time, back home for a month and then away again. So I think that I'm very lucky in that sense. And then the other sense is if I can say myself, I've got a pretty strong mindset in the sense that, like, if I commit to something, which you mentioned and a couple of other people that I work to, once I commit to something, I'm a bit of a stubborn asshole where I'm just like, I will get it right. I will do it. And once I made the commitment and the decision to go for it, because like you said, flying long haul, flying international and getting to a legacy airline like Cathay, it's a 15 to 20 year commitment that you've got to make a decision, because if you're going to get to captain, which is the top of the top, and I want to get to a training captain level where you're training other captains on a long haul level, it's a 20 year, commitment that you've got to do. So you've got to focus on your health and everything. But once you know I've made that decision, I think luckily my personality, just the way that I've been wired by my parents, especially, my dad has always told me, whether you say you can or you can't, you're right. I made the commitment. I was just like, I will do it. So yeah, it is a culture shock and it is difficult and not everybody can do it. But I would recommend everybody at some point in their life, leave your hometown. That's the way that you grow. Go travel, go do something.
Yeah, no, I love it. I really am impressed with that stuff. Okay, so have you learned any of the local language, Cantonese? Have you learned any Mandarin? Are you able to speak any of that shit yet?
I'm busy learning Mandarin at the moment. So it's easier for me to start hearing the words than pronounce it, because the difference between Cantonese and Mandarin is the same difference between English and Zulu, just like for some form of context. Cantonese has 9 different tones and Mandarin has 4. So there may be some words that are maybe the same, but for the most part, they're completely different languages. So
wow.
I would learn Mandarin first and then I'd try getting into Cantonese. But yeah, dude, how cool is this, right? So I was speaking to one of the local captains that I'm flying with. By local, I mean she's from Hong Kong. And I was telling her, no, look, I'm busy learning Mandarin. And she's like, well, you're busy learning Mandarin simplified or traditional? And I'm like, what do you mean simplified or traditional? And she's like, well, so traditional Chinese goes back thousands and thousands of years, right? Closer towards the 20th and the 21st century, the Chinese ruling party, or I don't know if it was the ruling party or like the folks that were in power at the time, to bring up the education level of communities that were in rural areas, they simplified Chinese by also like maybe doing less like patterns and stuff like that on the characters. And a lot of the characters are actually picture-based. So you'll see I can try to draw it now, but a flame, for example, anything hot will have a certain Chinese character. They made all of that easier and that became simplified Chinese or simplified Mandarin. And that's what became popular in all these rural areas in China, which I thought was quite cool. But yeah, so to answer the question, learning Mandarin, not any good yet.
No, you'll get there, knowing you. All right, I want you to see what is happening in South Africa, because you obviously are out of touch. One of the big trends that has taken place is that estate agents now think they are content creators, okay? So they're putting stuff out every week. I get, mostly from people in the audience, I get a clip of some embarrassing, humiliating recording that some fucking person who sells houses for a living is now posting on the internet in an attempt to make themselves a brand, because everybody's now a brand. And this is so unnecessary because it's now got utterly ridiculous. So you think, and anybody who's seen the other clips over the last couple of weeks, months even, these are pretty awful, but this has got to be scraping the barrel, lowest of the low. I don't even know whether this person is maybe taking the piss, and it's hard to tell. Because it's so bad, right? Take a look at this. And then all I want you to tell me is whether or not you would buy a house from this person. Are you ready?
Bring it on.
Hi, everyone. I'm Charmaine from Just Property Heritage. I'm here today, as you can see, at James and Ethel Ray Park. admiring the scenery, admiring the birds. Look at all these wonderful birds. And also enjoying the doggies. Making sure to get my steps in and I eat my berries. Goji berries, blueberries, blackberries, cranberries, and strawberries. Remember to call me now to sell your property in the quickest amount of time.
I can't take much more of that. Wow.
So two things. One, all the budget went into that video production because she's only got one earring on. Don't know if you noticed that. So all of the budget, she couldn't afford the other earring, and she's guaranteed to still be. She's drunk. That's why she's leaning on that pole like a stripper. Like she's absolute dude. So, she's got to be taking the piss.
I have two observations. The first one is the music is so bad and so porno. It sounds like porn music.
She's you, dude. You know what she did in her previous life? That's why she's using that pole. Like, it's a guarantee.
Let's not cast aspersions on this poor woman's character. The other thing I got to observe is I dated a girl probably about 15 years ago, and she's going to look exactly like that if she doesn't already. Because, you know, they're like the heavy eye makeup and all that weird shit. But it is bizarre how she's like holding on to the sign. I think she's probably pulling the wool over her eyes. I think she's not really. I mean, this is just, she's seeing how bad she can make it. She's like, okay, you guys all think you can make the worst video. I'll beat you to it. She's like a self-conscious trickster. I don't think it is possible.
I don't know. I'm living that healthy lifestyle at this stage. I might just buy that place to get some berries too.
Yes, sis. She loves birds. Come on, says Christian. She loves birds.
No, dude. And so this is what everybody's doing now. Is everybody coming? Come on. Yeah.
I don't understand. Somebody has to explain to me how that sells more properties. Surely you've got to go back to basics at some point and go, how is this going to help me do my business? Doesn't.
Well, listen, we're speaking about it. That's the reality, because remember, all these fitness influencers went to go be real estate agents in Dubai. We're not talking about them anymore because we know what they're doing in Dubai. But now the ones that are here in South Africa, I mean, we're talking about it. So
no, you're probably right.
You wouldn't be surprised if she probably made a sale.
No, you're probably right. Fundo says, did you see the trending video of the Zulu monarch drunk and swearing yesterday? It's bad. No, please send it to me. Is that King Misuzulu? Because if he was behaving badly, I mean, listen, you know, monarchy used to be this thing. We didn't know a lot about them, and every public appearance used to be very well coordinated and set up and spun, and the media were in on it, and they all kind of supported whoever this person was. So we got a manufactured version of them. There are no ways and means anymore of trying to present yourself in an inauthentic way and getting away with it like before. It just doesn't happen. And these people are people. I mean, you know, no one in the world wants to be around Harry and Meghan. And at one point when they got married, they were probably the most famous people in the world. And there were probably millions of people who would have loved to have spent 5 minutes with them. Now, their own friends, in inverted commas, in Hollywood don't want to be anywhere near them. They're like toxic.
Yeah, dude, but you know, I was thinking about this. I was thinking about this morning as well, because weirdly enough, I was watching the UFC press conference because Conor McGregor, Max Holloway fight this weekend. And I was thinking about this authenticity thing, because like Conor McGregor, I know it's a segue now from the monarchy that you're talking about, but this authenticity thing is a real thing. You cannot be fake online anymore, because it will come through. Conor McGregor has been kind of doing this whole religious thing at the moment where he's talking about God and how Jesus is living through him and everything like that, after he's been doing copious amounts of other extramural activities and clubs and stuff. And I'm like, okay, cool. I don't know if it's a front, not maybe he's legitimately like that. But at this press conference, his real self came through. The authentic Conor McGregor came through. And you must see the difference. It's like day and night. You cannot be fake online anymore. You cannot be fake in these videos or in front of people. Authenticity, there's just no time for it. There's no time for it anymore.
Yeah. And I'm pleased. I'm okay with that. I don't want these manufactured personalities. I don't want people who have a team looking after their brand anymore. I think that you just got to be who you are. And if that helps you, great. If it doesn't help you, then maybe there's a reason that people don't want to deal with you. You know, I think all of that's massively important. Basil says, yeah. Please tell us more about Hyrox. It's so riveting.
Listen, okay, so Basil is this friend of ours. He should actually probably do it because he put on about 40 kgs. So anyway, listen, I know you're not a big fan of it. It's obviously taken over most parts of Asia, a lot of parts of the Americas and Europe. Here's my argument for it. I know it's very culty. I'm not even going to remotely deny it. Culty like CrossFit and gym and so many other things. But especially
Basil,
for guys...
I hate you. Now look what you've done. Now he's on a roll about Hyrox.
I'm on a roll.
Fuck, listen, this is all I've ever wanted. This is my favorite Friday show
especially for guys
ever.
Over 35. Listen, especially guys over 35, it's not anymore about trying to build these huge ass muscles and look like these Baywatch oaks and... you know, beach balls that are walking on the beach. It's now all about longevity. And I'm a big advocate for the fact that if guys can get into the gym and go run 8 kilometers, even run a kilometer, and you're trying to build up longevity, you're trying to be healthy, absolutely brilliant. Yeah, Hyrox, fucking Hyrox. I'm a fan of anything that's to do with fitness at the moment because of that longevity. We're getting older, dude. We have to stay fit and healthy. And I've said to you, it's good to see you in the gym. It's good to see you in the gym. Now I want to see you run a kilometer or do 8. Come and join me. Come and do an Hyrox.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just dozed off for a second there.
No, but you know, the big thing as well is something that I'm working on. I mean, I don't want to reveal too much at the moment, but I'm working with a personal trainer here in Hong Kong with regards to longevity for pilots. And because it's a big thing. Hey? Like,
well,
our job
so this is
quite
interesting because you guys... Someone mentioned in the comments earlier, you guys are exposed to far more radiation than anyone else.
Yeah.
Because you're up in the, you know, the higher regions of the atmosphere where, you know, there's less density of atmosphere and less layers to protect you from solar radiation. But also that constant traveling, I mean, you get ordinary people who get, blood clots and all kinds of problems, circulation issues, but you have to be, if you don't look after yourself, it's going to go really, really badly. But I just have to say, I'm so sorry, says Basil, that I brought that up. It was the worst interview I've ever had to see. I'm so sorry that we got him onto Hyrox, and I couldn't agree more with that.
I think when I'm back in South Africa again, Basil and I need to come on the show at the same time and just iron this out. That'll be a fun show.
Well, I'll get Basil on one day on his own, and he and I will just talk about what a useless shit you are. That's enough. We will regale people with all the best stories about you.
I'll definitely listen to that episode. But dude, you're right. So with this traveling, but you got to take it with a pinch of salt as well, what some of these people are saying, because I listened to this guy called, well, I didn't listen to him, but I follow him on Instagram, Brian Johnson. He's all about longevity.
He's the one who wants
to
wants to live forever. He's done blood transfusions from his son. I mean, his poor son. That his son is like a laboratory for him to harvest shit from. He's basically taking his son's blood. He's taking his stem cells. This kid is just like a farm.
Dude, he said, I must actually try to find the quote if I can quickly find it, but he wasn't like said something crazy like, if you do more than four, yeah, hold on. Jet lag increased my biological age by 13 years. And he says, you can't do more than, what is it, Jay? He says something crazy like, you can't do more than 4 long haul trips a year. And you pretty much will die. Like in no exact words, but that's pretty much what he said. And I was like, dude, stop talking crap, because we're literally doing long haul flights. I mean, sometimes some of the captains here are doing, I want to, but I won't live forever. That's fine. But some of these guys are doing 5-6 long haul flights and across time zones, and none of these guys are pegged. When I hear guys like this, I'm like, just take a back seat and just don't generalize in those kind of things. But it is important to stay healthy. I completely agree with that.
All right, now tell me about Bangkok.
So I am convinced Bangkok is the the sex capital of the world, right?
Oh,
so for those that haven't been, Bangkok and Phuket, there's a lot of Russians that come down because Thailand and Phuket's one of the only places that like they could still get a visa to come for. So you'll find a lot of Russians there, and there's a lot of the fighting and stuff like that. But it's quite ratchet in some of these places. But anyway,
yeah, and they want to escape Phuket, having to be drafted for the war.
Yeah, 100%. So Bangkok and Phuket are arguably, in my opinion, sex capital of the world, because it was my first time that I went there. I went on a golf trip with some mates, and it was a golf trip.
Golf trip, yeah, sure.
So I've proudly, I can honestly say, never ever had to pay for sex or anything sexual related. You know, like, it's like, I think my parents raised me correctly. And anyway, these guys that I go with, a little bit naughty.
This all changes the dynamics of the story now that we know your mum is listening. And I've done enough to embarrass you in front of your mum. I don't want, if your mum's listening, maybe you should just cut the story here.
Nah, it's fine. I'll tell my mum anyway, because she'll be proud that nothing happened. So I go to Bangkok, and these guys are like, listen, there's different areas of Bangkok that are quite provocative. So it's like Soi Cowboy and Nana Square and all these different regions where it's pretty much brothels and strip clubs, and it's quite open. So these guys are like, we're going to show you what Bangkok's all about. I'm like, not really keen, but okay, let's go for it. Let's go for the flow. Go with the flow. So we go to this one strip joint, and these guys are like, listen, we know you've never paid for anything like this, but we're going to get you a girl. Choose one. And I'm like, oaks, it's really not my vibe. Like, I'm not going to go for this. And they're like, listen, just choose one else. We're going to choose one for you. So I'm like having a couple of drinks, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, listen, well, that chick's quite a pretty. Got tattoos, got like tongue rings. She's like, look, I mean, she was, I'll admit to you, she wasn't bad. So the guys are like, you know what? It's done. It's on. We're getting her for you. I'm like, oaks, that's not what I meant. Don't do this. Like, we are getting her for you. So they call her over. They call the mistress over because they've all these girls have got these mistresses that you've got to communicate with them first.
Madam,
they're kind of like, the mistress is the subject, the madam.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So they're like, no, well, they speak to the madam. They're like, listen, this guy, he's never done something like this. You've got to give a good price, blah, 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 blah. So they organize some kind of deal or whatever. And I'm like, admittedly, constantly say, guys, don't do this. Anyway, they organize, transaction happens. They're like, cool, peace out, we're leaving. I'm like, now you're going to leave me with these people. What must I do? So I'm having drinks. I've got no intention to leave the club with this girl. But anyway, having a couple of drinks. Next moment, I'm having a conversation. This girl goes quiet. And she like just looks up and she's staring at another girl walking like past the table. And I'm like, is everything okay? Like, what's going on? She's like, I really don't like that girl. I'm like, okay. Like, I mean, okay, no issues. The girl comes back and they start like having words with each other in Thai. And I'm like, I can see things are getting heated. This girl, Gareth, this girl stands up from the chair. She elbows the other girl in the face, like knocks her clean out with a clean elbow. I'm like, what is going on right now? I'm like, is this normal? They like doing Muay Thai and like they like fighting, but is this a normal night in Thailand? These chicks start getting into a fight. The chick's knocked out, so other girls come in and jumping. It's like five or six girls just like getting into this massive brawl. The bouncers are not getting involved. I see the madam running over. She like pushes me away from the table. She gives me the money back and she's like, you can leave. I don't think it's your night tonight. I mean, I hightailed out of there, but I was like, what the hell is going on? Bangla Road, yes. It's wild. So this is my first experience, and this is why I will never pay for something like that, because it was just like God's way of saying to me, mate, don't go down that road.
Okay, well,
so, yeah.
That story didn't go the way that I thought it would, but well done. Well done. You observed some female-on-female violence. Of course, you don't know the gender of the person in places like that because there are all those lady boys.
No, you can tell, dude. So, look, granted, there are... So, you walk down this one road. It's called Soi Cowboy. So, cowboy... Soi is like road, so cowboy road. It's got all these bars and everything like that. And a lot of these girls, lady boys, are standing outside and they try to drag you in. And they're quite strong, eh? So, like, you're walking down the road and they'll literally try to pull you in. And I'm not the biggest of dudes. Like, I know I'm training and everything. Like, but then they strive. You're like, okay, cool. That's definitely a guy. Like, you know that for sure.
You're most coming.
But so, and you can kind of see, dude. You look at the Adam's apple, and I know this sounds weird. I hate feet, but you can kind of see their feet. Their feet are huge, and you're like, okay, you know that's a dude. So just look down. Like, go past, because a lot of them they've had okay. I'll tell you another thing. So I'm flying with a local captain. He's like, look, if you ever go to Thailand, there's two ways to check, if it's a ladyboy or not. It's like the one way, obviously, you got to check for the Adam apple, but, the Adam's apple.
They're getting that shaved down.
You're getting that shaved down. And he says, even if you like go all the way, like there's ways to like loop things up, right? So even that you can't check anymore. Unless there isn't lube, then it obviously doesn't kind of work together. But then he said the only other way, and this is a guaranteed, you have to ask them for an ID, because on the ID it'll say male or female. They can't change that. They're not allowed to.
Well, so Basil that's the only way. Basil wants you to prove that you aren't a lady boy.
Yeah. So,
all right,
that's a story for another.
Just quickly, I do have to throw. Yeah. I have to throw in this story. You've probably heard it, Alex, but I don't think I've told it on the show before. I went to lunch with a then girlfriend's dad, and his friend had just got back. These are guys in their at this stage in their 60s, and his one friend had just got back from the full moon party in Phuket or whatever, and my then girlfriend's dad says, come on, tell Gareth the story of your trip to Phuket and the full moon party. So he goes, oh no, I don't think I want to tell that story, actually. I think it's quite embarrassing. He's like, come on, tell him your story. So anyway, he eventually, I'm not naming names here on purpose, but he goes, oh, all right, I suppose I'll tell the story. I mean, this is an old English guy. And he goes, well, I went to this party and I got rather drunk. I ended up taking a girl back to my hotel, and she was very attractive. But when we got to the hotel, I discovered that she had an enormous cock. So I said, and what happened then? He goes, well, I'm afraid by then the train had rather left the station. So
there's some guys that are fine as they did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, Australian as well. Thing. Like, there's a lot of Australian guys. Mm-hmm. Like Bali's amazing. I would also, I'd recommend to anybody if they come visit me in Hong Kong, travel to Bali. There's a massive party vibe, but there's also like a whole wellness retreat that people can do and stuff like that in all these different areas. But these Australian guys, they love going again, there.
Please. All right.
No, I'm not.
I've enjoyed catching up with you publicly, and next time you're in South Africa, we'll do something in person on the show. And look after yourself. Don't fly too close to the sun, Icarus, and we will catch up shortly. Thanks, dude.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for the chat, and I'm enjoying these daily briefings that you're doing. Thanks for keeping me in touch with South Africa. It's good. Nice segments, looking forward to hearing what Mo has to say after this. Ask Mo, by the way. Yes. It's all as Mo. About the time where Nelly killed me in studio.
Oh, but didn't Nelly almost kill you at a Andiccio's pizza once as well?
No, that she nearly killed our friend Tiger because he gave me the beating of a lifetime. So that's a story for another day. I heard
you got beaten up by Nelly in an Andiccio's. That's what I heard.
No. It was in the studio, dude. It was in the studio because I pulled a prank on her where I swore live on air.
Okay, so I'll ask Tall Ass Mo about that later, but you have an excellent, what is it now, midday?
1 p.m. in the afternoon, yeah.
Okay, have fun, dude. I'll catch up with you soon.
All right, thanks for the chat. Bye.
Thanks, Bru. Bye. There we go. There's Alex Cage.